Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for staying with me. My pleasure, as always, to continue to be with you. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know, I'm glad you're here. Jim Ostroff is with us, folks. Jim is associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and Joan Pride is off for a couple of weeks. Jim always fills in an outstanding way, and we're so glad to have him here. We've missed him on the show. Jim Ostroff, welcome back.
Hey, well, thank you, Jim, and good morning, everyone.
We've missed you, Jim. Thanks for being part of our day today.
I'm happy to.
Let's get right into the news here. This week, out of the Senate Finance Committee, Chairman Baucus, I think it is, as
yep.
I remember. Chairman Baucus from Montana, I believe is his state.
Right.
Passed out of his committee with one Republican vote and all Democrat votes a health care reform bill.
That's right, they did.
To be married up ultimately in conference with a House committee, a House bill, right?
House passed bill, eventually.
Yeah.
And we think that something will be enacted this year.
So the odds are, according to Kiplinger, is that there will be some kind of a health reform bill, health care reform bill this year in 2009.
There will be, and of course, what are the details?
The devil's there, isn't it?
It's in the details, and it's like the old thing. I mean, at some point you say, well, okay, we declare victory and go home. We can
right.
say we did it. So it really depends on what is done. The fact that they pass a bill is not on its face. Guarantee that
mm-hmm.
something, but its odds are they will do something this year.
Well, I think the Democrats have no choice. I mean, they have to do something because they put every bit of political capital. The president's put every bit of political capital. Most everything else has taken a back seat. And in fact, many, many jobs that needed to be done by Congress have not been done.
Absolutely.
In the name of getting this health care thing done. So if they don't accomplish something, if they don't actually get a bill that the president can sign,
mm-hmm.
then critics could look back and say it was basically a wasted year for this administration and for this congressional leadership.
It's all on the line. I mean, it's a gambit.
Yeah.
And they have done that. And if, they will enact some legislation
something.
And call it health care reform because they cannot say, oh, we lost a whole year. But again, people say, we could be looking, at three additional years of nothing. So
well,
it's
see, this is what bothers me about the whole process, Jim, and that is that when you're in a position where you have to pass something, that means that now we're legislating 100% for political purposes. And I'm not naive enough to think that that everything up there isn't political, but you'd like to think as a voter, as a taxpayer, I would like to think that that somewhere some element of this is towards really solving a solution, solving a
problem.
And there's some kind of altruistic leadership involved. But I actually believe now that it's 100% politics.
Well, it appears to be that.
And which is very frightening to me, and that we would want, because as you know, Jim, that you talked about the devil being in the details. The devil is not going to be in the bill that is passed. The devil is going to be in how these laws are promulgated and further written, because what they sign is not what we actually wind up living with, is it?
No. And basically, after all is said and done, directs agencies to write regulations.
Right.
And it's the regulations.
The promulgation.
That's right. They actually just say, you decide on the details. So, and that goes through a whole approval process, a regulatory process, but there is no further appeal unless to Congress. So you basically give these agencies the directive mm-hmm. to write thousands of pages of details.
Right.
That's it.
And by the way, I was told earlier in the week that just the outline, that when it passed out of committee this week, the final bill wasn't even available. It's now about 1,500 pages, but just the outline that wound up passing out of committee was about 250 pages.
That's right.
Just the outline.
That's right. I mean, it is enormous, and it's a very significant issue, and we elect these people to do the good public good. And
let's talk, Jim, about some of the elements. And you guys mm-hmm. reported on that. Some of the elements of this bill. Talk to us about some of the key elements.
Okay, well, I mean, the first one right off the bat is, you know, it's basically a requirement, a mandate that every person must buy some insurance coverage or pay some penalty to be decided on.
100% of Americans have to either have to prove that they have insurance, and if either it's already provided for them, and if it's not, they have to kick in either and buy something from one of the options or pay a penalty.
Well, that is it. That's rule one. They said, because we want everyone covered, but we also need the income,
right?
You know, from that.
Well, and from an actuarial standpoint, I mean, this on its face, that one provision makes a lot of sense because from an actuarial standpoint, when you can spread the risk over more people, even people who aren't sick, especially people who aren't sick, mm-hmm. which is what we do with every other kind of insurance, life insurance, car insurance, et cetera,
right.
You need to be able to spread the risks over more people, and that makes it more efficient, doesn't it?
Right. It does. And, exactly. That is the exact model. Virtually all states, maybe all of them, do require motorists to have insurance.
Right.
Or put up money or something.
Right.
But to facilitate all of this, too, it would create, what they call a marketplace, an exchange or a marketplace. But this would utilize private enterprise to basically offer everyone some mm-hmm. choice, would allow them to shop for coverage. And the idea is to create private industry competition that hopefully, it is said, would keep prices in check.
I don't understand that part. So what you're saying is, hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, this is very important. What Jim is talking to us about right now, folks, is the ticklish part of this whole thing, this mandate. And whether the government becomes part of the competition or just encourages competition. And you probably already know where I come down on that. 20 after, right back with Jim Ostroff. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Little Chicago bringing us back. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for going there and using it to your advantage. We built it just for you. No barriers to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you come in and hang out with us, use our stuff. You can listen, you can read, you can ask questions, you can check out my blog, you can subscribe to my newsletter, you can look at our and spend some time with our Brain Trust members. So the largest community of small business experts on the planet, folks, right there at smallbusinessadvocate.com. And as you know, they're part of our show every day. And, of course, if you're on Twitter, if you want to follow me there, I'm at Jim Blassingame. Jim Ostroff is a good friend of ours and is an outstanding member of our Brain Trust. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And we're talking, Jim, about the health care reform debate that's going on right now. It's actually out of Senate committee. And now, the House, I guess we should clear one thing up. The House has three bills, I understand.
That's right.
They have to try to consolidate those three and come up with one that then would go to committee, right?
That is correct. And in this case, it happens sometimes, the House various bills, but they are then sort of looking to see what the Senate will do.
Right.
I've seen this other times with energy and other things, that Senate does something and say, oh, this is what we want, and then quickly on the House side they say, okay, well, let's fall into line.
So you're saying, I'll show you mine if you'll show me yours. Is
that's
that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's about it.
One of those things.
And they are, but I got to say, just fact is they are moving ahead here. As we discussed, everything's on the line, and they're looking to do something by the end of the year.
I want to get back into the elements, and we were just talking about the mandates. And see, I think the what you described a minute ago, I that was the best I've heard that described, Jim. You did a good job.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad thing. I would prefer not to have a federal requirement that everybody have health insurance, but that's not something we, as you say, we already live with that in our states with car insurance, and if we have a mortgage on our home, our bank requires us to have homeowners insurance.
That's right.
If we borrow money in small business from a bank, the bank requires me to have life insurance.
Right.
You know, then you too. So you know, that's not these are market forces that are not uncommon to us, not without precedent. So requiring us all to have health insurance is not a, and to me is practically not a bad thing, because it spreads the risk and everything.
Right.
What I've got a problem with though, Jim, and this is the other thing that's going on right now, and this is where we're stuck, I think, and I want you to talk about this. And that is to the degree that the government stops encouraging people to have insurance from the marketplace, and they start becoming one of the competitors.
Well, I got to say, yes, that is the big, I mean, one of the very
the
big...
public the option biggest, issue.
Right, the public option. And it appears, you know, right now that Congress will not go down that road right now, will not mandate a public option. But it's a situation. Odds are that they will not. It's still something out there, and I got to tell you, you know, those people have taken the measure of public opinion.
Yep.
And that's why they've backed away from it.
Right.
And you know, but if they felt that people really didn't care, you know, it might sneak back in the last second. But right now,
but people do care. I mean, the polls are showing that people are not interested, and so to the degree, Jim, that the problem for the Democrat leadership and for the president on this public option issue,
right.
The problem is not the Republicans and the conservatives. The problem are the people on the far left.
Well,
because they want the public option.
I mean, they basically come to the saying, we must have it. That's the only thing that makes sense. We must have it. The only thing that'll work is to have government offering this.
Right.
So that's where they come from.
So here's the interesting thing, I think, to watch. If we want to, you know, as you know, Jim, this is like watching sausage being made.
Yeah.
But if you want to watch the real flashpoint, it's going to be the public option issue. And if there's a public option issue involved, there may be some conservative Democrats who will vote against it and prevent it from happening. If there isn't a public option involved, then the ones on the left, the far left, may vote against it out of that principle.
That's right.
And so that's where the touchdown is going to be made or not, right? I mean it's a two-minute drill, isn't it?
Exactly, and nobody can say how it's going to come out, which is why it really is a high wire act, as discussed, and there's no net. There's no safety net here.
And see, this is why the reason why we're talking about this and spending time on this, and the reason, folks, why I have been doing this now all year long, and as you know, now many of you know, this healthcare reform issue is something I've been talking about for the whole time I've been on the air.
That's
almost
correct.
12 years. I have never stopped talking about this long before anybody ever heard of Barack Obama.
Right.
Pelosi is, or Reid is the leaders of Congress. Long before that, years before, the decade before that. But right now, the big issue is this public option thing, which I'm against, and I've been on record a long time being against that. So, but regardless of how you feel, you know, that's your business. You get to do that for or against. But now is the time to let your member of Congress know how you feel about that, right, Jim?
Strike while the iron is hot.
This is the time, isn't it?
This is. I'll just say, no matter what your point of view, just looking at it from a legislative point of view, you know, decisions will be made very soon, public opinion matters.
And so the thing is I think the thing to say when you call or email, don't say I'm against this, I'm against the health care reform. Say I'm against or for the public option. I think that's the big issue that they're trying to debate right now. Not whether we have health care reform. We're going to have that. Stay with us. Right after these messages, we'll be back.
Gonna climb a mountain. He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you. We got our good buddy Jim Ostroff back with us. Jim is associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about what's going on in the Kiplinger Letters, in the Kiplinger Letter this week, as Kiplinger reports on things that are happening for you and me in the world and in our marketplace. Jim, any other points you want to make on the healthcare issue? One other big element I want to touch on one other thing myself, and then you can follow up on this. Another big element is the cost, right?
Well, it is, and
you guys report on that this week.
Well, and
the cost to the impact on the deficit.
Yeah, well, it certainly will make it grow. No matter what what they say, what they do, it comes to it's not $1 trillion, folks. No, they're talking about $900 billion.
But that's the people who are in favor of it. That's the estimate of the people who are in favor of it. And the people who are not in favor of it say it's a lot more. So let's just say it comes in somewhere in between. That's still over $1 trillion.
It probably, I'm saying, is in the real world, it probably is. And like everything, it depends. If you feel it is that, there are more pluses than minuses, that it is needed, that that we can deal with an additional deficit of that size, well, then that might argue for this. But in any event, that number is something that hits you in the middle of the eyes,
right?
And you look at. And once enacted, we will not go back.
Right. That's the problem. That's what I'm worried about, Jim.
It'll never go away.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. Because has anything ever been passed into law by Congress that ultimately was abolished?
Well, yes, actually, the Interstate Commerce Commission, 1887, and 110 years later. It went out of business, but was basically other agencies took over its role.
I think they just went to sleep and forgot about that one. I don't think they meant to do that. I think that was an accident.
Yeah. But no, they were eternal.
What I don't understand, but Jim, what I don't understand is if they would do what you talked about a minute ago, if they would just pass a bill that required everyone to have insurance and let the competition fall as it may on the marketplace, why would that cost the government anything?
You might say it would not initially, but the thought here is that, okay, without that, if people fall through the cracks, eventually the government has to pick that up one way or another.
Well, but that would come from the people who pay the fee.
Mm-hmm. Well,
see, that if you have to pay a fee in, if you either have to buy insurance or pay a penalty. Tax, which I think might not be a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have insurance, then then the government would get that. Jim, before we run out of time on this segment, another thing you guys report on is how this might affect small companies with less than 25 employees who offer insurance, like my company,
and like so many companies over here. And the thing is that the companies 25 and fewer workers will get a tax credit to be determined.
Mm-hmm.
And they could use these, understand these exchanges, to get more competitive rates. And of course, that's the name of the game. Getting
the exchanges.
More
now,
rates.
These are the ones. Is this like a association of health plans that we've been trying to get through for 10 years?
I believe it is.
They're kind of co-ops, aren't they?
Yes, essentially. And this is something that small businesses have favored.
Right.
For the longest time.
Mike Kinsey tried to get it through the Senate. That's right. It passed the House 8 times, and it couldn't get it through the Senate because of Ted Kennedy.
But exactly, because they wanted it as part of a big plan.
Well, they knew that if association health plans passed, universal health care would never be passed.
Yeah, so that's why it was defeated by the majority then. And the thing is that they would get, Smalls would get some type of tax credit to do this, and they could use these exchanges to get better rates.
Right.
And, you know, the thing is, there's no, in this case, there's no mandate that employers offer or provide coverage.
But if they don't, they're going to
pay various penalties.
They don't, they're going to pay a penalty, right?
Right. So effectively, there is.
Yeah. Hold on to that thought, Jim.
Folks,
this is, as I said earlier, it's time to contact your member of Congress and tell them where you stand on these things. Because this is 1/6 of our economy. Over $2 trillion of our economy is in health care, and it's the thing that touches all of us, every single one of us, our health care coverage. Stay with us. Tweet Hill. Welcome back, 17 Till. Little Robert Cray bringing us back, my favorite blues man. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for hanging out with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Jim Ostroff is our guest. He's our good friend. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Jim, I'd like to tell my audience about the Kiplinger website because it's a good one. It's one that I've been using for a long, long time, almost since it came out, way back in the 90s, Kiplinger.com, and is how you spell that if you're typing it out, if you want to Google it, Kiplinger, and that you can find all the publications there at Kiplinger.com, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the biofuels letter. Those are the three biweeklies
right
now, and then you got a magazine.
We have Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, which was the first of these magazines going back to the late 40s.
Yeah, 49, actually. And then, of course, the Kiplinger Letter, the weekly flagship that's just had its 86th birthday, is the one Jim and Joan and I work off of every week. So, folks, I hope you check those out. And Jim, you got a phone number?
Well, I do, actually, and it is 800-544-0155.
Yeah, check that out, folks. Don't forget to ask them for the 30-day free trial. Hey, Jim, over on page two, there's a section in there. It's very interesting. I've been very much interested in the reverse mortgage product that people are offering. I've always thought that was a great idea. You've got folks who have built up amassed a home that they've paid for a home that's now in a neighborhood, and the home is worth multiples time what they paid for it, and yet even though they've got this great asset, they don't want to move, but they've also may not have as much money as they'd like to have to live on.
Right, and the reverse mortgage allows people basically to live in their home and basically give up the equity in the home, to someone, and they get money along, or people, the homeowners, get the money along the way. And so the idea here is, that you can have that money every single month, and you like to live there, and you're not paying any more mortgage.
Are these things annuities where you sign over the deed, so to speak, and the mortgage company that does this, they either do really well or not so well depending on how long you live?
Yes.
Is there a fixed amount that you get, and could you pay them back for that?
I gotta say this, I don't know the details. In most cases, though, it is a situation where you basically sign it over, they pay you an installment basis, like an annuity, and of course, it's an insurance product. If people have long and healthy lifespans, it'll be a good deal for them.
I've always thought this was a great product, but apparently there's been some abuse of this.
Well, the thing, there certainly has been, and the thing here is that, in essence, it's getting people, they are selling people on this idea and not providing sufficient details or having many little things in small print, and people get stuck unaware. Mm-hmm. But we feel at Kiplinger, it is a very good idea, but it's a matter of enforcing laws on the books.
Right, exactly.
And the same thing you might say with our financial mess.
Mm-hmm.
There were many things on the books that you cannot do this, you cannot do that.
Right.
But it was, they did not enforce laws.
Well,
the
same thing
the
happened with Sarbanes-Oxley. Sarbanes-Oxley was a knee-jerk reaction to infractions to laws that were broken that were already on the books.
On the books,
yeah.
not being enforced.
We didn't need new laws. We just, as you say, needed to enforce the existing ones. But the point about one last thing on reverse mortgages before we leave, this is a wonderful product option for some people, but it's not for everybody.
That's correct, and it's important. You might just say, I think the concept is great. Let me get more information, and then you need to get a lot more information. And, you know, a lot of times it's good if you can get some type of outside advice.
Right.
Maybe a lawyer, and
well,
something you can get for free. But just someone to say, please look at the fine print, because I don't know.
There are a lot of people, you know, almost every baby boomer out there, people in our generation, Jim, is dealing with something like this with their parents.
Well, absolutely,
and I've been through it, and most of my friends have, and so these are things that are all part of our lives right now.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, let's move over and talk about the stimulus package. The question you guys ask is: has the economic stimulus that we've had in the last year, has that been successful? What's the verdict?
Well, like so many things, it may be. No, it's mixed. It did not really jumpstart the economy, and the point here is that a lot of these things, really, as you'd expect, huge amounts of money, and they could not have been hundreds of billions of dollars could not, you know, ultimately over 800 could not be spent. Even we have trouble spending money that fast.
Yeah.
But it did provide a bit of help over here, that, you know, to keep our gross national product, which is us,
right,
from really falling further.
Didn't it really do more to shore up our confidence than to do anything practically? Wasn't it more of an emotional stimulus than it was an economic stimulus?
Yes, and basically said, you know, hey, we're here, we're holding the trap door,
yeah,
you know, it's okay, you can walk.
Now that we don't need that emotional support as much, why don't we just give the money back to the Treasury? Let's just not fund all that, because it's inefficient. The way the government is doing this is inefficient. It's not as good as businesses, as the marketplace could do it. So I think they should just stop the stimulus, folks, and give it back. Don't spend the money that we don't have, by the way. And let the marketplace take care of it from here. I think we can do that. Tintil, right back after these messages. Stay with us.
Too much, I'm lonely, but no one can tell.
Life goes on day after day.
Little Jerry and the Pacemakers. That's Jerry with a G. Welcome back. One of the great songs from the Wayback Machine. 7 Till, I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for hanging out with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check that out when you get a chance. And don't forget Kiplinger.com, too. Jim Ostroff is our guest. He's associated editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim, one of the things that you guys report on this week, and I know you've been covering yourself, is the different ways that we're going to be managing our inventories in the future. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, and I say it's sort of the biggest thing in business going on that you don't know about, and that is a shift here now from gigantic centralized warehouse systems and distribution centers to those that are distributed more around the country.
Right.
And the reason being here, of course,
more decentralized.
It is more decentralized, but you have goods going in and out of many different ports,
right?
And so that minimizes the chance you're going to have a terrible backlog like we did a few years ago in L.A., Los Angeles.
Right.
But more than that, it's getting closer to customers, and we're just saying here that being served, again, by a lot of short-haul trucking, out we can go and once again really practice just-in-time.
There you go.
Business.
That's
it's
the magic. Those are the magic words.
Just
three magic
in
words.
Time, which permits you.
Rather than, Jim, pardon me, but rather than just in case.
That's exactly.
Just in case is expensive. Just in time will make you money.
It does. And you have lower carrying costs, lower taxes.
And if you had to, since it's so much closer to you, you could overnight it and the cost wouldn't be that much.
That is correct. And so
and if the customer really wanted it, they'd pay you. They'd pay the freight.
Right. That's right. And so this is beginning a pace now. And you know, their number. We've seen even General Mills, Target, QVC, Walmart, and many others now are beginning to go and populate the country with sort of big but small, right, somewhat smaller size distribution centers.
Well, but these are things, folks, as small business owners have got to look into these kinds of infrastructures that are happening out there among your suppliers. Find out what they're doing, and if you're trying to decide between one supplier and another supplier, find out where their distribution centers are, how close they are, how responsive they are. I mean, let me tell you something, folks. Your future is not going to be in building bigger warehouses.
No.
Your future is going to be showing customers what you have, delivering the A products when right there. Make sure the A products spend a night under your roof. That's fine. But the farther down you go, B, C's, and D's, you got to have fewer of those in your building and more of them available on an overnight basis or a two-day basis.
That's it.
How you're going to, because inventory is expensive, and it can, I tell you, a lot of people have gone under. They failed with a warehouse full of inventory nobody wanted.
They drowned in inventory,
yeah,
and a lot also increased the chance it literally could go stale.
Well, don't forget you got to have some place to put it.
You need a place to put it. You have to pay tax on that inventory.
You got to keep it cool and heated and manage it and count it and
mm-hmm.
all that. I mean, inventory is not your friend, ladies and gentlemen. Products that people buy are your friend.
Right.
So don't think about inventory. Don't think about building bigger warehouses, bigger barns to put things in. That's not the evidence of your wealth. The evidence of your wealth is the bottom line that you create every year.
The bottom line, not your palace. That's going to go away.
That's exactly right. Well said. So Jim, let's move over and talk about energy on page 4. You guys, I like your prediction here.
Like
tell us about
bold
it.
Bold forecast.
Yeah.
I got to say that prices are going up now because of it's a dollar situation, a weak
right.
dollar, and people are doing a lot more speculation. But the thing is, basically, this demand by the ultimate consumer, the motorists and businesses for various fuels, remains weak, and so we feel that prices will turn down soon. And so we're saying here they'll be fairly moderate. Oil, you know, $55 to $65 a barrel.
Right.
And gasoline prices and diesel prices, after a little bump up, still on the way down, you know, into early next year.
I hope you're right. From your mouth to God's ears.
Yeah,
from
I,
your
we,
mouth
we
to Saudi Arabia's ears, Jim.
We try.
One of the things that is a concern, though, right now, and I've never heard this before, and it's one of the reasons why I guess I'm concerned, and I've talked to some of my economists, and they're not as concerned as I have been, and that is the possibility that oil, could the unit of value of oil, which is currently denominated in U.S. dollars, they're talking about possibility, or at least discussing, they're debating changing it to either another currency like the euro or to a basket of commodities. That's if that happens, Jim, that won't be good.
It will not be good. I got to say, though, that this is it won't happen anytime
no,
soon.
No, it won't.
They're discussing it again, but they are discussing
But it's one of the reasons why the dollar doesn't need to stay weak for too long. You get too weak. We got to make sure that, and one of our buddies, Steve Forbes, agrees with that. Hey, Jim, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Have a great one. Thank you.
We'll see
Jim.
You next time. Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, a great American. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.